This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Flavor, please tell your neighbors, Ian Beckles with flavor in your ear. Wake up, sports, music, and fashion, best of podcasting. What's going on now and what's soon to happen? Be sure to stick around, no fast forward or skipping. Dropping jewels, you don't want to miss them. Make sure you listen, Ian Beckles with the flavor in your ear. The voice of the people's here.
Welcome back to Ian Beckles and flavor in your ear. You know what we do? We hang out at the wonderful restaurants with the wonderful food. And we talk sports and fashion and pop culture, the whole nine yards. So I found another wonderful restaurant. It's not new to me. It might be new to you if you're from the Bay Area. 2 weeks ago, we were at Eulalie. We were at Anise last week, two different feels. And this week, we're at my favorite burger spot, Square One Burgers. And it's been that for, I don't know how long I've been going here, since it opened from way back in the day. I've been coming here for at least 5 years, I would say. And I think I've eaten every single burger on the menu, unfortunately, and probably everything that's on the menu, period. So Square One Burger, this one's on Henderson. They have them in Clearwater. They have them in Gainesville now. They're all over the darn place. And the owner, Joni McNeil, who is a chef, and you could tell with the food, she also owns Bella's, and She's a big deal in the restaurant game. So Square One Burgers, I'm here on Henderson. And this is like in my hood. So I'm here quite often. They know me here. I have my own drink here. Not to toot my own horn, but they have a drink made with Touch Vodka called the Dignitarian. And it's delicious. And I've had it a few times, and it flows real nice, and you got to watch yourself. Anyway, this is another version of Ian Beckles and Flavor in Your Ear. I always bring a guest on here because I just want to just smack my gums for 3 hours. So we have Chris Cook from PeterReport.com. He's going to help me out. It's a perfect time to start talking a little bit of football. The Combine just went by. I don't know about you, but I could watch the Combine all day. I don't know why. I'm sick. I could watch dudes running and jumping all day long. I don't know why. I think maybe I've been through it, but it's entertaining to me. And I taped it, DVR'd it, and went back and watched it. So I know a little bit about what happened in the Combine. I know a lot more about the Combine than I do evaluating college football players. So I watch some football, but I'm not there breaking down film. A lot of people claim to be gurus and experts, and y'all get the middle finger because you don't watch film. You don't have time to watch all that film. All right, you don't do it. So I don't like the word guru. And Mel Kiper is first on my list, by the way. I don't like Mel Kiper. I'm gonna tell you that. I don't like him. Never did. I don't like his hair. I don't like his face. And I don't like the fact that he said I was cat meat when I came out of college. So I'm gonna say this to Mel: you was wrong. Cat meat, and you know, I got 9 years in. I was in 11 training camps, so I think you're wrong on that one. You're wrong on a lot of them too, so I like to say that so Mel Kiper can get the finger too. So we're going to talk a little football today. The Buccaneers, from what I hear, and this is being taped Thursday morning, so from what I heard, DeSean Jackson, I believe, just signed with the Buccaneers, and that's the best news you could possibly have, because if you put a weapon on that field last year, and we did a lot with a little. We didn't have weapons. You know, weapons help. We put a weapon on that field for Jameis, and I think it's a different outlook in last year's performance because, you know, they're one game away from making the playoffs. They still need help in a lot of different places, but I think it's just about putting the right pieces around Jameis Winston. So that's good news. We'll talk a little bit about free agency. I'd talk about Colin Kaepernick too, who was a free agent. Now all of a sudden he's going to stand up for the national anthem. So I kind of stood up for him at the beginning because, you know, he stood his ground, so to speak, and said, I'm going to stay with this. But you know what? For 1 year, and now all of a sudden you're a free agent and you want to get picked up by another team, and all of a sudden now you're going to stand up for the anthem. I mean, first of all, I wouldn't believe you, okay? And second of all, well, what do you believe now? I mean, now it's okay. Last year it wasn't. Now it's okay for business. I mean, that's a business decision he made. So I like people that stand for what they believe in. And I don't know if that's Colin Kaepernick anymore. I understand his cause. I really do. I just don't know if he was the right person to get it out there. And that being said, I don't know if Colin Kaepernick did more for, maybe black people last year, if you really think about it, because there was a lot of dialogue. People were talking about a lot of the different situations, and that was because of Colin Kaepernick. And he took the brunt of it all, and I'll give him some love for that. But I would have gave you more love if you continued the protest. And he's bailing out on that, and that's a business decision, and that is fine. I want to talk also about, this is something that came up years ago, and I don't know how many years, but the whole Jerry Sandusky case, you know, that was almost like OJ, you know, in the radio business, because, you know, there was so much going on, and there was two sides of it, and some people thought he was innocent, and Joe Paterno was innocent. Y'all need to all check yourselves, okay? All of y'all, because when that came about, not only did I say he's guilty as hell, and so is Joe Paterno, by the way, I said this, there's a culture of touching boys in that neighborhood, period. There's no way you can let Jerry Sandusky, who, by the way, had numerous allegations of him and little boys, numerous. Jerry Sandusky's backyard backed up to a playground, okay? So it was like, you know, Neverland to him. Every day looking out at little boys, and I don't know if he even likes little girls. I don't know. So there were stories of Jerry Sandusky checking into hotels with boys 1 mile from his house. Give me a scenario where that is necessary. 1 mile from your house, you're checking into a hotel with a little boy. You can't tell me that everybody didn't know this, okay? Because, you know, this is who knew it. Joe Paterno, all of his coaches, the players from Penn State, the janitors, everybody knew it. And if you're checking into hotels 1 mile from your house with a boy, give me a scenario where that's necessary. So everybody knew about it. And more so than that, I believe it was happening more than in his bed, unfortunately, for anybody who went to Penn State. It's sad to hear, but I'm guaranteed you don't let somebody get away from that. Listen, he was caught sodomizing a boy in the shower. He was caught. Okay, the young man that came to tell Joe Paterno, he didn't say, I think. He said, I saw him sodomizing a boy in the shower, okay? From that point on, it's on Joe Paterno that he is never around a little boy again. Never. Period. I don't care what happens after that. If it doesn't go to trial, you better, no, forget it. He has to go to jail. And the fact that he continued to coach with Joe Paterno makes me sick to my stomach, because he raped a lot of little boys after that. Does everybody know, we live here in the Tampa Bay area, does everybody know that Jerry Sandusky flew a little boy to the Outback Bowl? Does everybody know that? And that was after the stuff in the showers. Jerry Sandusky was caught dry humping a little boy behind the stands at a basketball game. Dry humping a little boy at a basketball game. And you know what he said? I'm teaching him wrestling moves. You should have strung this dude up and shot him ages ago, okay? And now, guess what happens? Everybody's going to say, you're being a little too much. It's a little too outlandish. Okay, Jerry Sandusky's son was just arrested, okay, for kiddie porn and messing with minors. Jerry Sandusky's son. And you don't think the mom knew nothing about this. You really don't. You really don't think the mom knew anything about that. Come on now. I believe there was a bed downstairs, and Jerry used to go downstairs with the boys and hang out on the bed. Okay, you can go ahead and think that nothing happened there, but I'm not sure where you're from. You probably don't think OJ did it either. It's a wonderful series, but when it's all said and done, OJ did it. Well, should he have gone to jail? This is our judicial system. No, he shouldn't have. He absolutely should not have, unfortunately. And he's back in there now, and then he might come out again. You know, he got off for chopping two people's heads off, got off, and then got 33 years for something that should have been 2 years. And then spend 9 years, and then they're going to come out, and then OJ is never boring. OJ is going to do something crazy. and then he'll be back in the news again. I just think he likes his name in the news. But I don't think chopping two people's heads is the way to do it. And obviously, the great Donald Trump, you have to get Donald Trump's name because it's fun. You know, I don't know at the end of his tenure whether he's going to be a good president or a bad president, but he's fun. It's not boring at all. I mean, he'll accuse anybody of anything. The people that are supposed to be taking good look, you know, keeping an eye on Donald Trump, they cannot rein him in. He's tweeting at 6 o'clock in the morning, dogging out Obama, wiretapping the whole nine yards. I mean, that's not a small accusation, okay? That's a very big accusation. And this whole thing with Russia, when I first heard it, first of all, if anybody tells me anything about politics, I won't say that's crazy because it's not. If anybody watched Scandal, I believe Scandal is very close to the way it really is. And if you watch Donald Trump, everything around him is just like Scandal, other than, actually the women too. He's just grabbing peas and doing his thing. But Donald Trump is around craziness. And this whole Russia stuff, whether they messed around with, you know, with the election, I thought it was, it can't happen. And then, you know, Russia met with Donald Trump. By the way, they all said they never did anything with Russia, all of them, okay? Every one of them. Oh, no, we've never talked to Russia. Donald Trump talked to them, documented. Then he had to have his attorney general step down because he was lying. So our attorney general is a liar? Our attorney general is allowed to lie under oath? What happens if I lie under oath? What's going to happen? We allowed our attorney general to lie under oath. The president does it a lot too, by the way. Attorney general has to step down. His national security advisor steps down. That's because they step down because they can't rat anybody out. They're not allowed to. But they lied before. His campaign manager lied, said he wasn't in touch with Russia, and he was. And Russia was had a meeting with Trump's son-in-law. So, and this was all before the election. So something was going on. You know, Trump keeps on telling us that, you know, he has no relations and he doesn't know them and blah, blah, blah. But he keeps on also saying, we should be good friends with them. That would be good for us. So we'll see what's happening with all that. And it's fun, though. It's fun, but it's also scary. I was at a little seminar yesterday and had this discussion with this young lady. She was a CPA, very intelligent, and we're just talking about, you know, Donald Trump and the progression of all this and where we're going. And it's funny, I think everybody wants the same thing, and everybody started off on different sides, left and right, but I think now it's just confusion. I just don't think anybody knows what's really going on anymore, and I think Donald Trump being our president is going to end up exposing the dirt that the government's dirty. I said this way back. I don't believe in the process of government. I don't believe in it because all they do is lie and they tell us lies and that's it. I'm waiting for a good government documentary. I watch government documentary and all of them are of the government lying to us. Remember Pat Tillman, the football player, played for the Cardinals, American hero, left NFL to go to war, had a great salary in the NFL, left the NFL to go to war. If that ain't, you know, a tough SOB, I don't know what is. So he leaves, goes to war, goes to fight for his country, gets killed. The government gives us this big story of how he died as a hero and he was saving battalions and blase, blase, blah. And I'm like, good way to go out, Pat. Good for you. Then a week later, they're like, man, we were joking. It was friendly fire. So they can't tell us the truth if they even try. They can't. I mean, that's not even, they shouldn't even have been hiding anything there. I mean, we know friendly fire happens. So you're embarrassed. So every time you're embarrassed about something, you're going to lie. I don't know if Donald Trump has said the truth one time yet. Not one time. You know, yesterday they had the march and everybody was wearing red for females and the women and equality. I'm okay with all of that, okay? But then Donald Trump has to come out and say, I respect women more. You know what? Stop saying it. Just do it and act that way. I mean, you, when you say I'm less racist than anybody, that makes you most racist. When you say I respect women more, you shouldn't even have to say that. It should be a built-in thing that you respect women. You don't have to go around saying I respect women. It's a built-in thing. Don't say it, all right? Just do it. Just respect women. So, and you think, out of all the people in the world, if Donald Trump wasn't a president, okay, and I say, give me a list of a million people that respect women, you think he'd make anybody's list? Because, you know, he says he respects women more than anybody else, but he's done 100 things toward women that I know for a fact are worse than anything I've ever done towards a woman. I'm putting it out there. That means verbally, physically. I mean, they say that he literally used to go around grabbing peas, but he was the Don. What are you going to do, sue him? How are you going to win that? How are you going to win a lawsuit against Donald Trump? Not only are you going to lose that lawsuit, you know what else is going to happen? They're going to put your business all out in the streets, okay? So you better be a lily white person, and they don't exist. So you, and that's what's sad about somebody like Donald Trump. He's so powerful, he can go around and do what he wants, say what he wants, grab whatever he wants, and nobody can really do anything about it. So we might talk a little, you know, pop culture and politics, because I love Donald Trump. I love him in an odd way. When I see him, I cringe, but I love him in an odd way, because he just doesn't give a rat's ass. He doesn't care. I don't know if the president sees the right place. And I'm this is what I'm scared of. Donald Trump, whether it's 4 years or 8 years, he ain't going to go out without a war. He's going to get a war, okay? There's no way in hell I've heard him say, I like war. You think Donald Trump is going to get out of this without his own war? He's going to have to create his own war. Somebody's going to say, some country's going to say something to him. He's going to go, you talking to me? And then he's like, you talked about my mama. And that's it. He's going to bomb you, and then he's going to have his own war. It's going to be the Trump war. So he said he likes war. I've actually never heard anybody actually say that before. But today's going to be probably a whole lot of football heavy, which is wonderful. I don't consider myself a draft guru or, the man in anything when it comes to football. I know a little bit of football, okay? But evaluating talent, especially college, I think a lot of people blow a lot of smoke. You know, like, I know this, I know that, I'm a guru. But I want to bring somebody I know that's in the know as far as Buccaneers go, the inside scoops. I'm not around the locker room very much. So what I do is I bring somebody on who is definitely around the locker room and around the scoops and has been that way for a long time. I got Mark Cook from the Peter Report, peterreport.com. How you feeling today, brother?
I'm good, man. I remember being in the locker room when you were in the locker room.
How about that?
In the old Tony Dungy days.
We're all showing our age a little bit.
Well, yeah. I was really young. I was like 12 when I did that.
Oh, yeah.
That.
You were
like 30.
Me too. You know, it's funny. I talked to some people that were around them back in the day, and when I go to football, it looks like it's the same people. It doesn't change that much. Right. How much has the athlete changed? Because I've talked to a few people, and they're like, the athlete has changed immensely from what the 90s to now. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think so, and I think a lot of it comes down to the training aspect of it. Now, let's go all the way back to the 70s when I was a kid and watching this Buccaneer team, remembering Leroy Selman working in a bank in the offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, some guys literally had jobs in the offseason. And there's that old famous picture of Len Dawson smoking a cigarette, mm-hmm. right, with the Chiefs. You know what I mean? Today's athlete is, and you know from being in the industry and seeing the trainers and the things like that, and I've seen your transformation with some of your workout stuff. You know, it's really a year-round thing now. It really is. These guys, they take a month off when the season ends, maybe a month and a half, but they get right back into it because it's such a competitive sport, and there's so many good athletes out there. And college programs are better with their nutrition and with their training and things like that. So these new guys coming in, they're always posing a threat. And as Raheem told Rondé, you know, I'll keep it till I can replace you. And they were best friends, you know, but he was deadly serious. And that's the way the coaching in the NFL world is. There's always somebody coming up looking. And the athletes, I believe, have changed. You know, it's certainly even the big guys, all right, the hogs like you guys were, they're in, really phenomenal cardiovascular shape.
There's no
stomachs
anymore.
No, there's not.
Well, let me say this, okay? And I played in the early 90s, okay? Mm-hmm. And my coach was Carl Mock 1 year. And he was a center for Earl Campbell and the Houston Oilers. So he was substantially older than I am. just an old school dude. He, you know, he said at halftime they used to be smoking cigarettes and they used to be drinking beer.
Sure.
Drinking beer at halftime, which is crazy. But go back from the old athletes and compare them to today's athletes. Now the guys are doing Pilates and the guys are doing all kind of different stuff. But there's no durability. There's no durability. The old athlete is way more durable than the new athlete.
And you know what? Part of that is low body fat percentages. You're more susceptible to those soft tissue injuries and things like that. A guy like Mike Evans, a guy like Doug Martin that has, you know, little body fat. I remember when I coached high school a long time ago, we had a tremendous running back, one of the best in the state, Chad Scott, who ended up playing at North Carolina. Tremendous running back, but his body fat percentage was below 10, and he was good for about a half before he just started cramping up and had a lot of hamstring injuries. But you see that in the NFL. Now, they're trying to move from that to make them more durable. You mentioned Pilates. Yoga is a big thing in the NFL like this. You know, they're stretching and the physiology as far as the muscles go. They're working on trying to move past that where they're not as susceptible and as durable. But you know what? You guys were tougher. Let's just face it.
No, I'm telling you.
You guys were tougher.
We were tougher. Like, my generation was tougher. And the generation before, it's
even
tougher.
Even more.
To me, I equate it to parenting, okay? Nobody can say they're tougher than their parents. Nobody.
Right.
It can't happen.
Sure.
Because, you know, if your parents went through something, okay, it usually improves a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And generationally, there's no way my kids are tougher than me.
Right.
And there's no way I was tougher than my father.
No.
I mean, it wasn't close.
You're absolutely right. You know I got a 16-year-old, and his life revolves around media and girls and stuff like that, you know? But my dad, you know, he's in his, you know, late 60s now. But he was a real badass, right? I mean, this was a Vietnam guy. Okay, I mean, you know, I'm nothing compared to him.
That's what I'm saying.
Nothing compared to him, but you're absolutely right about
that. Well, my father was from Trinidad, okay? And he had to drop out of school in fourth grade to take care of his family. So he works. That's all he did.
He's
gone now, but that's what he did.
Yeah.
Schooling had nothing to do with him.
Right.
And he didn't really, I don't say he didn't care, but he didn't inquire. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And everything was work, hard work.
Yep.
Didn't say a whole lot. And it's just now I see a lot of these kids. And I grew up a certain way, and I didn't have a lot, okay?
Right.
I had a lot compared to him.
Sure.
And I have nothing compared to what my kids have.
Right.
Okay, so I think the jump keeps on jumping.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to learn lessons and be a rounded person when you don't ever need anything or want anything. It's tough, you know what I mean? So I'm blessed to have brought my kids up and gave them some wonderful things, but they missed on. They missed out on some stuff that I grew up with.
I wonder all the time if I'm hurting my son, but by giving him things.
Of course,
I mean, we had a discussion last night. Your cell phone is a privilege, not a right. I mean, but these kids feel like, oh, it's a right for me to have it. You know what I mean?
He doesn't do anything to pay for it. You know what? Is it still a privilege? Because I remember distinctly. I was arguing with my wife, and I go, a 12-year-old does not need a cell phone, and that was back in the day because my kids are all in college now. Now, if my kid's 7, I'm not sure I wouldn't give him a cell phone.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's the culture. It's part of what's around. And listen, there's no doubt if my son, who's in 10th grade right now, went to high school without a phone, he would probably be ostracized to a degree, right? I mean, who's this weirdo without a phone?
You can't.
And not just a cell phone, the newest iPhone.
Absolutely. You can't come to high school without a phone.
No.
You can't do that. You would just be the poor kid.
Right.
Isn't that sad? You guys can't afford a phone.
Right.
Which, you know, listen, poor kids have phones.
Yeah.
Everybody has phones out there.
That's true.
But these athletes these days, I'm watching them, and they don't have the body fat. Running backs last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
No more than that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody said, who would you rather, AP or Doug Martin? I go, neither.
Yeah.
Why? Doug Martin had one great season in the middle of a lot of very subpar seasons.
Yeah.
He's never healthy. He's had concussions. He's got the drug stuff going on. Adrian Peterson, he came back from his last injury and he did this. That was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
As a running back, you know what 4 or 5 years of aging is to you as a running back?
It's like dog years, right? It's 7 years.
Absolutely.
1 year of running back lifetime is 7 years of real life, essentially.
Well, back in the day when players were durable, okay? Walter Payton never missed no games.
Yeah.
Emmitt Smith never missed games.
Right.
Barry Sanders never missed games, okay? Now you have these guys, you play 5, you know, they play 11 games a year or whatever. The difference is this. Tony Dorsett never really missed games, and he's having problems, you know, with his noggin right now. The difference is, back when Tony Dorsett played, Jack Lambert was 215, and Jack Ham was 205.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, when you're looking at players out there like James Harrison, who's 280 and runs better than both of them, it won't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Physics tells you that the running back is going to get destroyed.
Yep.
You know, it's funny. Every once in a while, you see a running back who, Warrick Dunn was a guy that, as small as he was, just had a knack for not taking that big hit. You know what I mean? But you're right. You don't see that very much. Mm-hmm. And you see guys, I'm a Florida State fan, talk about Dalvin Cook and some of his fumbling problems. And I read a quote from at the combine from him. And he said, you know, it's always trying to get that extra yard. I'm the guy screaming, get down, get down. Sure. Number one, you're going to lose the football, because if you're sitting there fighting four or five guys, they're going for the ball. Yes. Number two, you're going to take a shot.
Sure.
Get what you can get and get down. Live to play another down. But, you know, that's kind of that old school mentality. A lot of these guys don't have that. You appreciate that, but you also see how dangerous that can be as well.
Sure. I see players like Warrick Dunn's a great example. Okay. I never played with Warrick Dunn. I've watched Warrick Dunn, and nobody's ever run like that.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever been that small and run, because Warrick Dunn never ran a sweep.
Right. He was a between-the-tackle guy.
But, I mean, in the trenches, taking licks every play, but not getting hit.
Right.
Like, he was the best at taking away his surface. He'll get hit and spin off and hit the ground. Like, you never saw him get plowed and get hit back, okay? Mike Alsat's another guy, okay? You could throw that, you know, that template of a running back out. There's never going to be another Mike Alsat. And everybody, listen, I know Mike personally, okay? I watched most of Mike's games. I remember when Mike came in the league and I was in the locker room, I said, I've never seen anybody run like you. I've never. He's able to take away his surface completely to where I don't even know how somebody's going to tackle him.
Right.
And then to be as big as he is and still be able to go 50, that's a tough thing. And I told him, I said, dude, if you keep your head on straight, you're going to be fantastic. I told him that.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for one Mr. Gruden that came in here and what did he do exactly? Did he wait? Okay, I'm not a John Gruden fan. I'll put it out there.
Okay.
I'm not.
Sure.
There's good reason.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not a John Gruden fan.
Yeah.
But I hate when people argue with me with certain things. Like, I was there. I've talked to people. I've talked to everybody in the locker room. If anybody thinks that John Gruden treated Mike Alsat fairly, they're wrong. They are wrong. They took a guy who is a perennial 1,000-yard, 800-yard rusher in college, high school, everywhere, got to the league, still rushing the ball, still ran the ball as well as anybody else in the league. He got him and made him a real fullback and block. First of all, Mike couldn't block.
No, he was never a very good blocker.
He was a terrible blocker.
Right.
He never blew anybody out of any hole.
Right.
He would position block sometimes, okay? He made him a blocker after a neck surgery, and as a fullback, he never gave him the ball.
Yeah.
You can still give the fullback
absolutely.
The ball. So
absolutely.
What do you think happened with Mike Alsat and John Gruden?
That's a good question. You know, I covered the team back Sam's last year through most of Dungy. Then I was away for a few years. I missed the whole Gruden years, but my boss Scott Runnels still talks about those days. And in that media room, you know, that's something that I love about this job, Ian, is being in that media room with Stroud and Fred Goodall and Roy Cummings and Ira Kaufman, guys that have covered this team for 20 years that remember these things, and they tell me these stories and the crazy Gruden stories and things like that. There was animosity there. There was some sort of jealousy there. I don't know that anybody's ever been able to put their finger on it directly. Ira tells a story of, you know, Ira had written a column about, you know, give Alsat the ball more, something like that. So they went to Minnesota. Gruden gives Alsat the ball 21 times or something like that. He runs for, you know, 78 yards. I think they maybe win the game. I don't remember the whole story. But the first thing Gruden says in his press conference is, you know, what do you think about that, Ira Kaufman, or something like that. Now, I mean, here's a guy that's trying to prove a point to a media guy, worried about that.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of crazy if you ask me.
Wouldn't that be crazy if somebody that high up cared about the media, a president?
Right.
Our president.
Now we're going to go there, which is fine with me. I don't mind. Good with me.
Our president.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You said nobody's ever put their finger on it. Would you like me to put my finger
on it? Put it on it.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I was around for the whole damn thing, okay? I saw the whole damn thing. I knew John Gruden in Philadelphia. He was my offensive coordinator in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So I had beef with him there.
Right.
Okay? And I'm not a beef guy. I'm really not.
Sure.
I don't have beef with a lot of people.
Right.
Then I came here. I didn't play with him. I didn't play for him here. But I did do the John Gruden show one year when they were 5-11. Not the best time in the world. No. I couldn't have so many scowls.
Right.
And like, you know, like when I say politicians don't tell the truth, neither do head coaches.
Oh, yeah.
Like I would ask him a question. He would answer it. And during the break, he would say something completely opposite.
Different. Sure.
Like I would say, hey, coach, you think your offensive line is good enough to win games? He's like, yeah, Ian, I really have faith in our offensive line. And during the break, he would say, who would you run behind? Kenyatta Walker or Roman Oben?
Yeah.
You know they suck. And I'm like, well, I know, but I'm trying to ask you.
Right.
Like, you can't say that right. yet. But this is John Gruden in a nutshell, okay? And I know him well.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, he doesn't talk to me anymore because of that 5-11 season, and I got fired and I got paid to not work. Anyways.
I've tried to do that, by the way. I've yet to do that. Anytime I get fired, I don't get paid.
Yeah, that's the only time I was fired and paid, trust me. Actually, they sent me home at the radio station for a month and paid me. That was cool, too. But John Gruden in a nutshell, he is so narcissistic that he will not allow anybody on the offense because he couldn't touch the defense.
Mm-hmm.
That was from what I hear, they didn't even want him in the meeting room, okay? That was Monty's team, and that was Marinelli's team, and they didn't even give a crap about the offense.
Right.
He would not let anybody on offense's name be bigger than his.
Yeah.
And the second it became bigger than his or was creeping up, you were out, okay? And let me give you some names. Jurevicius, McCardell,
Keyshawn,
Brad Johnson.
Wow.
Listen, I saw John Gruden one time at a party, and he went and hugged Brad Johnson. And Brad Johnson, I've never seen somebody more uncomfortable in the room than John Gruden was, because it was one of those things where you can't really say anything bad about your head coach that just took you to the Super Bowl in the media, because it won't be perceived well. But in a room at a party, it's real. It's real life. And I watched John Gruden walk around and try to talk to people, and people turn their back on him. And I mean, that's real stuff to me.
And who doesn't like Brad Johnson? I mean, how can you be jealous of Brad Johnson? One of the nicest guys I've ever met.
No, and it's not like. It's like, he tried to screw Brad Johnson. Yeah. The year after his Super Bowl, he tried to bench Brad Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, he don't have no love for him.
Right.
Let me tell you something about Brad Johnson, okay? If Keyshawn Johnson was on fire, I wouldn't piss on him. I'm going to say that, okay? I seriously.
Sure.
I walked in a locker room one time with a football. My wife said, I need to get a football signed for a charity event. So I walked up to Brad Johnson first, and I don't know Brad Johnson from anybody. And I said, hey, Brad, Ian Beckles. He goes, hey, I know who you are. Shook my hand. And I said, hey, my wife has this, you know, charity event. Can you please sign this football? And he grabs it and he goes, I would love to. And he said, he goes, you want me to make it out to somebody? I know that's cool. He goes, what's a charity? Blah, blah, blah. I hope everything works out. And I was like, that's a really cool.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, and I've met him since half dozen times. Just a really regular, cool dude.
Yep.
Okay. It was Keyshawn Johnson. Hey, Key. And I know Keyshawn Johnson because I was in the locker room with him with the Jets.
Right.
Hey, Key, how you doing? And he just looked up at me, and he was sitting in my locker. That's where his locker was.
Right, where yours used to be.
Where mine used to be.
Yeah.
And he looked up at me, I go, hey, my wife needs this thing. And and before I finished the sentence, he grabbed the football, and he signed it, and he gave it back to me, and turned, and he would start to talk to somebody again. And I felt like saying, brother, I will dot your I. You're going to respect me sitting in my damn locker.
That's right.
I was in that locker for 7 years. That's longer than you've ever been in this, son of a bitch.
Yep.
And, you know, there's two levels of athletes, and those are two different levels for sure. So Keyshawn Johnson, meh. Brad Johnson, okay.
Brad Johnson, all right.
How is he doing physically? I've heard he's kind of beat up a little bit.
You know, when's the last time I saw Brad? I believe it might have been at Derek Brooks things last year at the Hard Rock. I believe that's the last time I saw Brad, and it may have been even maybe at Mike Allstott's thing, one of the events last year. He seems to be doing okay. Yeah. He's got a son that's a heck of an athlete, apparently, he's proud of. But, yeah, he's one of those guys that took some abuse, and he's paying for it today, you know, with some hip, I think, or neck or something like
back,
you know.
Well, you said took some abuse. I love when people say, well, the Bucs won with Brad Johnson, so anybody, I go, listen to yourself. I go, Brad Johnson is one of the toughest quarterbacks I've ever seen. Not just on the Bucs. I'm talking about Brad. People don't realize Brad Johnson saw guys bearing down on him, and he waited that last half second to throw that ball and take a lick and deliver that football. So to me, Brad Johnson's even Trent Dilfer. Oh, the Ravens won with Trent. It's not easy to win. It's really freaking hard to win a Super Bowl.
It doesn't matter how good your defense.
I don't care.
It doesn't matter how
good
you're a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You've worked your ass off to get there.
Of course.
And I was, you know what? This is crazy. I started around the time that Trent was drafted and kind of got to know him when he was a rookie, and we kind of became, you know, it's friendly as media and players are.
Yeah.
Had a lot of respect for him, his work with FCA and things like that. You know what I mean? So I was always kind of a closeted Trent Dilfer fan. I remember one time my wife was really sick. You know, she had diabetes. She ended up having a transplant and is doing great now. But I remember, you know, Trent and I was after a game at the old stadium, and he just, you know, casually said, "How's your wife?" I said, "Man, she's having a tough time." And he says, "I'm going to pray for her." Guy gets down on his knees in the locker room, right? Mm-hmm. As he's getting dressed, and says a prayer for my wife.
That's
That's just the kind of guy he was. People didn't see that part of him.
No.
And yes, look. Could he have been a better quarterback? Absolutely. He admits that he could have done things a little different, worked a little harder. You know what I mean? But he won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. He's got one of those rings, and not many people do. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And he was tough. I remember one time he went after John Randall in a game against the Vikings. Randall went low at his knees. Mm-hmm. Trent jumped on top of him, had him pinned down. I mean, he wasn't scared to
go after
guys. Trent would put his shoulder down. Yeah. He didn't just duck out of bounds all the time.
People don't realize that either. Like, the quarterback on an NFL football team was – also the best basketball player on his basketball team, okay? And a lot of them, they'll dot your eye. I mean, they're competitive dudes. I saw Vinny Testaverde grab Kurt Jarvis and body slam Kurt Jarvis. Kurt Jarvis was 300 pounds, okay?
Big boy.
So you better, and I heard Vinny's a gold glove boxer, so you better watch what you're asking for.
That's right.
Speaking of Florida State quarterbacks, we have a pretty darn good one here in Jameis Winston. I've run into Jameis about 3 or 4 times. Not in a setting that I would like to. I would like to sit down and have lunch with the kid. Because first of all, I like the kid.
Yeah.
Okay. And for people who don't like him, that's your prerogative. That's fine. But you got to start checking yourself. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the things that happened in college, other than the rape allegation.
Sure.
Okay. And to me, that's not. Unfortunately, sometimes that's not white, black, gray, or whatever. That can be a lot of different things.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sure.
Especially if you're the quarterback, you know, of a Division I team in Florida. Okay. That's a big deal. All right. So I don't know what happened in that situation. I really don't. Other than that, people will love to bring up some old crap. He stood on a table. He's 20.
Right.
Or he's 19.
Sure.
You know what we did when we were 20? Like, seriously. I mean, he went into a Publix and took out crab legs because they were giving out free crab. He didn't steal the crab legs.
I can assure you he was not the first Florida State player to get free food from that Publix. Or the last. And I'm not knocking Publix. They're a great sponsor. Peter Report. We love them.
It's
the only
Publix.
Place I shop.
You know what?
You know what
I mean? You know
but I wish I knew somebody in the seafood department.
You ain't lying, especially with the crab legs.
Absolutely.
First of all, Publix always has really hot women in there.
They,
always. Yeah. My buddies come from Canada. You know what? The first thing is go to Publix.
Let's go to Publix.
And I go, what? They go, just go to Publix.
Look, if you can be hot wearing a green top and just plain black pants, then you know they're really hot and they're Friday night
there
outfits.
You go. And listen, the South Tampa crowd rolls through there, and sometimes the UT girls come through there. You know, sometimes it takes me a little while to get through Publix.
Absolutely.
But
hey, listen, if I were a single man, that's where I would go to meet ladies. Publix, absolutely.
It's not a bad place. So if anybody out there thinks that they're going to be in college and be the man and walk around and see everybody wearing your jersey, and then somebody tell you that there's free crab legs for you somewhere, I swear to you, I'd knock people down to get me some free crab legs in college, okay?
Sure.
So all those kind of things like that, they're funny, though.
Right.
Okay, there's memes and stuff, and I've even sent them out there. I think they're funny.
And Jameis has made fun of himself a little bit with since that's happened, you know?
But it's to the point now where the kid's done so many good things before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wipe it clean,
okay?
And with that crap that happened in that classroom, all right? Has anybody ever said Jameis is all that eloquent? He's not all that eloquent.
He's a
really
country boy from Bessemer, Alabama.
That's what I'm saying.
He's a country boy from Bessemer, Alabama, who has not been polished on the circuit as far as parliamentary procedure and public speaking and things like that. The thing that makes Jameis great, Ian, and I've been around him for a long time and knew him from Florida State days, is Jameis doesn't just stand up and give a rehearsed speech. Okay. He talks from the heart,
and
it's impromptu. Now, you know this, and I know this, and everybody probably listening has had this situation. You get thrust into a situation. Mm-hmm. You can say the wrong thing, put your foot in the mouth a little bit. I think Jameis understands now completely why people were upset about it. But I know for a fact Jameis was beside himself when the onslaught came on because he didn't understand.
Sure.
He did not understand what happened there. And you know, again, I can show you the text. I was just talking to Jameis's dad last night about some different things. Mr. Winston, good guy. And we were talking about Jameis's girlfriend, Bree. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen Bree or met Bree or seen her on some of the ESPN mm-hmm. stuff, she's not the kind of woman that you're going to say, shut up and sit down and be silent
probably
to.
Not, no.
She's not.
No.
And I told Mr. Winston, I said, she looks like she'd put a knot on his head if she had to. And, and he laughed and said, you got that mm-hmm. right. She doesn't take a lot of crap. So. And I've met Mrs. Winston, and Mr. Winston doesn't treat his wife as subservient or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Now, he grew up in the country, right? Probably Baptist. I'm Baptist, Southern Baptist. I mean, there's ways that people. So there may be something ingrained in him that's not knowledgeable, you know, that he doesn't know. But there was nothing mean-spirited about it. There was nothing where he was trying to make a point mm-hmm. that went. It was just a situation where he was asked to speak. Mm-hmm. He saw these kids not paying attention. He tried to bring them back into the conversation and use the wrong choice of words. And you know what, Ian? If that's the worst thing that people can attack this guy on in his career in Tampa Bay, then that's a hell of a guy right there. Because I've seen what he's done, as you mentioned. I was at his Christmas jamboree that he did. You know, those kids, every one of those kids left with around $1,000 worth of stuff that they wouldn't have had. They all got Xboxes. They all got Nike swag. They all got all kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen him work with the Special Olympics for 2 years now.
Sure.
Nobody spends more time out there after practice, after a long day of training mm-hmm. camp, an hour on the field with the Special Olympics kids.
Wow.
You know, it was a Tuesday, I believe, that this happened. This is a day in the offseason where most of the guys, they're in the Bahamas you know, in California, Malibu, like Adam Humphries was. Checked him out on his Instagram. But where's Jameis? Jameis is taking time out of his personal time to go speak to kids. And I don't know that enough of that is made because people have been waiting to pounce on this. Because really, there hasn't been anything since the internet meme where he stood up on the table.
Zero.
There really hasn't been anything.
Zero.
So people have been primed and ready to jump on him, and they had this opportunity. And I'm just amazed at how it blew into such epic proportions. Now, I will say this. You know what? I'm glad that happened because I think Jameis will be a better person because of it. And I think people, because of it, a lot of people came to his defense. A lot of people didn't realize some of the stuff that Jameis did. I kind of spent a lot of time, even on our Pewter Report Twitter, I've got a picture of him working with Special Olympics, a video that I put up, and people had no idea about this. Jameis doesn't do stuff for a pat on the back. He's not that kind of guy. He does it because he wants to do it and because he's got an 8-year-old brother at home, you know what I mean? A young kid that he wants to be an example to and motivate and lead. So, you know, Jameis is genuine. There's nothing unreal about this guy.
I met the kid, okay, a couple, three times, okay, mm-hmm. and I talked to him, and I'm very hard to sway. I'm very, very hard. I am, okay?
In your former life, I listened to you. Before, I mean, during his rookie season, after mm-hmm. they drafted him.
Yeah.
And you, and I appreciate your perspective because you played the NFL. I remember you saying, this kid is not going to know anything his first year. He's not going to know anything his first year. You know what I mean? He's going to have to prove it to me. He's going to have to prove it to me on the field, off the field, and things like that. I remember listening to you that. But see, you've taken in him with an open mind, and you've been able to formulate your own opinion, not by headlines, but by your interaction with the guy.
Sure, and I saw the kid make the speech. When I first saw him, I never heard of Jameis Winston before. Mm-hmm. I was watching college football, and they went in the locker room, Florida State locker room, and he was on Jameis Winston. I believe it was his first game. You remember that?
It was the Clemson game, first season, probably third game of the year. Yeah, yep.
Was it his first game or the first time I've heard him?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was speaking. And I got a good buddy of mine, Dave May, is a good friend of mine. He's an FSU fan. My buddy Josh. I text them both immediately. I go, this kid's different. I didn't watch him play yet.
Right.
I go, this kid's different.
Right.
Like, I could hear his voice, you know? I'm like, and I watched him play, and I'm, you know, skill is great, okay? But what makes you a fantastic athlete is the amount of dog you have in.
Yeah.
He got more dog than I've seen in a long time. The Buccaneers I'm not going to say that because I'll be disrespecting Brad Johnson and Jeff Garcia. They both were dogs in their own right.
Sure.
Okay? They just didn't have the ability that Jameis has.
Right.
But he also has the ability to wow people in the know. Like, everything he does, like I said, he's not a really eloquent guy. Although everything comes out of his mouth, I believe that he believes
absolutely.
It, okay? And I met him, and I talked to him, and I swear to you, his eyes didn't move one inch either way. He looked me right in my face. Yes, sir. No, sir. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, sir. And he heard every word I said. There's other people I talked to. I swear to God, they couldn't spend 2 seconds.
They look like you're looking right through them. They don't hear a word
but
you're saying.
Those are the ones that don't make it, okay? So, like, when I was growing up and coming through the ranks, okay, as a young snotty-nosed whippersnapper, when anybody that had been in the league for a while talked, I swear I listened to every word they had. Like, I'd be a sponge.
Sure.
At the end of Anthony Munoz's career, he was here in Tampa Bay, and he actually got hurt, so he never actually played for the Buccaneers, but he was here in preseason, and I was playing beside him. One of the sweetest men I've ever met, and I swear to you, I couldn't be more than two feet from the dude all the time, absorbing things.
Right.
So if you can't respect what came before you, and you know what's odd? Warner Sapp respected what came before him.
Sure.
And that's why I look at Warren Sapp. Listen, Warren is crazy. We all know. We know he's crazy as a loon.
None of you than a fruitcake.
Yeah, and what makes him fantastic also makes him crazy, okay? Yeah. But the loyalty factor with Warren is a big deal for him. It's either he's loyal or he's not.
Right.
And he's going to chin check you. That's his thing. Jameis, to me, comes with credibility just from his demeanor, because you just don't see that very often. And if they could put the right people around this kid,
right.
Like, everybody kept on, Gerald McCoy's a leader, and I was like, all right, okay.
Right.
Okay, I'm all right. How many leaders step aside? Any of you know?
Jameis, as a rookie, had to go to Gerald and say, I need you to be a leader. I need you to be a leader. We need that on that side.
But I want you to say that. Listen, I've been the biggest. I think Gerald McCoy's a good football player.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay?
Sure.
There's parts of his demeanor I don't appreciate. Uh-huh. Okay. Just like you telling me you're a leader, I don't appreciate that.
Right.
Because I've been in a locker room before. And if anybody on the. If Warren Sapp says you're my leader, you know what I said to him? No, the hell you're not. You know what you are? You're my peer.
Right.
Okay. You know, leaders are created. They're not said.
That's true.
Okay, I never heard Derek Brooks say he's a leader. Not one time.
Right.
Never heard Rondé Barber say it. But on Sunday, that ball was hitting Derek Brooks in his chest. You think the ball hitting somebody in your a linebacker in the chest is by accident?
Right.
He knew where the hell that ball was going.
Absolutely.
Rondé Barber.
Same way.
Who is playing zone, and the ball's hitting him in.
Yep.
He never made a great catch.
Yep.
In the chest.
Yep.
So that's coaching. That's. But that's what makes you a leader, okay?
Yeah.
Back in my days, Paul Gruber never said a word. Not one. But he was a leader.
Sure.
Because Sunday he played. He played hard. He was prepared. And he was up for any challenge that they have. So I just don't like to hear people say the word leader.
Yeah.
I hear Jameis say it every once in a while, and it makes me cringe. Don't do that. You are a leader.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah. You don't need to say it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is. And that's, you know. He could have been more of a leader early, but the organization itself didn't want him to be thrust. They wanted him to earn the respect, and it didn't take but a few weeks, Ian, into that first season where those players, and I talked to him. And listen, before the draft up in Mobile a couple years ago, talked to a couple of the Florida State people, talked to some people up in Tallahassee, and they talked about it. And I was like, you know, yeah, but gosh, how's this 21-year-old kid going to come into the NFL and be a leader of 28, 29-year-old men?
Mm-hmm.
By exactly doing what you said, being the first guy in the building, the last one out, the guy that's going to run extra sprints after practice.
Yep.
There's not a Friday this year that Jameis Winston didn't spend time once practice was over. Mm-hmm. On Fridays are a little different for the media. We don't get open locker room. We go see Dirk off the field. It's a short day. And they practice, but, you know, in just shoulder pads and helmets. And there wasn't a day on a Friday this year that Jameis wasn't spending extra time with his receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I noticed? Some of those things they were doing, particularly with the tight ends, I would see two days later in the game.
Of course.
But they were perfecting those things, and that was, you know, part of Jameis. And Jameis just has that natural uncanny ability. Let me tell you a quick story about Jameis that I think that kind of says a lot about him as a person. Again, I'm just a reporter. I'm a nobody. His rookie season, before he ever stepped on the field, the Buccaneers do their cut for a cure where they shave their heads for cancer. Mm-hmm. Jameis participated in that. Probably the PR department put him up to it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Great. He did it. Brought my son, who was 14, getting ready to start high school football at the time. And I introduced him to Jameis, and they talked for 2 or 3 minutes. And this was in June. okay, Jameis still hasn't played his first game, goes through the majority of the season. Late that year, I'm in open locker room. Jameis grabs me by the shirts and walks by. He goes, "How'd your son do in football this year?" Now, I mean, that's not normal. Yeah. That's not normal. Who has that ability, that recall ability? And those are the things that are going to help him on the football field.
Absolutely.
He'll remember a play. He'll be going through a play this year. He'll remember what happened in a split second, what he did wrong 2 years ago in that play. And it doesn't end there. And I was like, wow, okay, he remembers. And he says, he was a kicker, right? And I said, yeah. And I was like, wow. All right, that's in late November, maybe December. Last year in the offseason, we had a suite holder event. I was there. Again, you know, Scott and I were there, and we're talking to Jameis. Jameis, again, says, "How's your son doing? How's his grades?" You know what I mean? I was like, how does he remember this stuff? This year, November comes around. Ask me how my son's football season ended up. I told him he screwed around. He wasn't eligible to play because of his grades. Jameis gave me 10 different things to tell him. He said, "I'll tell you what, is he coming to the game Sunday?" I was like, "I'm not sure. It's his birthday." He says, "Bring him to the game. I'll meet him after outside the locker room when I get to my press conference." I was like, "No, you don't have to." He goes, "No, I want to." And I was like, okay. So I brought my son. He sat up in our Pewter Report suite. Him and a friend came. It was his birthday. So we you know, after the game, you know, I told him where to come down where he can get player autographs. I didn't think Jameis would kind of remember this. So after the press conference, first thing Jameis does, his post-game press conference, is he goes, "Where's your son at?" Now, again, we hadn't talked about it since Wednesday before that. And I'm like, well, he's actually out there, you know, in the line where you guys come out. He goes, "Bring him in." I go, "I can't just bring him in." You know what I mean? I don't have that power.
Think of all the things he would have to think about, but he remembered
he
that.
He remembered that. And so he had Alan Barrett go get Douglas and bring him in there, and he spent 5 minutes with him, and he got on his ass about his grades.
Good.
He said, you know, this is what he said. This was the message, and I thought this was a great message. Don't let the highlight of your life be how cool you were in high school. Because that's 4 years of 75 years.
Yep.
And he says, you know how many people I went to school with? And their whole highlight of their life was what they did in high school. He says, that doesn't mean anything. He says, take care of your grades, respect your parents, you know, and keep your faith. And he said, you do those things, you'll be successful in life. And you know, that meant the world to me that this guy would take the time to do that. But again, that uncanny ability to recall and remember things, that's just a gift that you're born with. I don't think you can learn that. I think that's just something that fortunately he has.
Well, I think you're born with it to some degree. And I've heard his father speak, and I see him and his father, no doubt. And when you talk about being a leader, you said a couple things where you said, I don't know how you can come in, you know, as 21-year-old, 20-year-old, and lead these men. I was there with Trent Dilfer when Trent Dilfer got there. He wasn't mature enough.
Right.
And he says that.
Sure.
He'll tell you he wasn't mature enough.
Absolutely.
There was some other things happening behind closed doors with Sam Weich and Trent Dilfer that weren't good.
Right.
Okay, we all knew it. You guys knew it. We knew it. And it wasn't conducive to winning. But we've had another young kid in here with a lot of potential, Josh Freeman. Now, do you ever remember hearing him doing anything extra?
Now, I take that back. Went to two of his football camps. His second one, he didn't show up for until it was over.
Well, dude, we were supposed to
talk
to him.
That's right. You were supposed to be in the air. Yeah, and over there at Wesley Chapel.
And the Bucks were, you know, hiding the fact that he wasn't there.
Everybody was free. Even his mom and dad didn't know where he was that morning.
Well,
because Ron and Teresa were there. They weren't sure where he was.
If I had a nickel for every Josh Freeman story that I have, I would be a rich man.
Yeah.
And none of them is good.
Yeah.
Okay? None of them are good.
Yeah.
But you never heard of Josh Freeman staying late. You never heard of Josh Freeman being the first one there.
Right.
You never heard of him being the last one there. You never hear him doing camps in the summer with receivers. None of that.
Right.
That's not an accident. Okay? There's a reason why Jameis Winston and Mike Evans, every time Jameis Winston rolled out, he looked for Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. And you know what? They hooked up every time.
Right.
Like, Mike Evans caught so many touchdowns last year by Jameis rolling and throwing back across the field.
Yeah.
And he knew what was going to happen.
Right.
That's not by accident.
That's right.
You know.
That's chemistry that's developed well before the training camp starts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think we're in good if we get DeSean Jackson, which is supposed to be the rumor. This is Thursday morning. By the time you guys are listening, it'll be probably Friday and beyond. So the Buccaneers will either have DeSean Jackson or not. I said this about our offense. Well, I'll say since ever. We need a guy that can catch the ball and go 80.
Yeah.
Okay, we've never had really that guy who catches the 80-yard bomb. We've never had this guy. We never had a guy catch a slant and go 50.
Right.
We have never had that guy. DeSean Jackson is that guy.
Amazingly, the Buccaneers were the only team in the NFL last year that did not have a pass completion of 50 yards or more.
I didn't know
that. Isn't that crazy with a guy
that.
Like Jameis Winston, a quarterback? Where was
and
the
Mike
speed?
Evans,
where, but Mike's not
Mike's
that.
Not, yeah.
not that you know. I mean, he's a great guy. You know, you throw it up, he can get it. You know, he's big and strong, can box mm-hmm. people out across the middle. But you know, take it and go 50 yards. Mm-hmm. That's not his strong suit. DeSean Jackson brings that to this football team. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, Ian. There's a lot of players in this draft too that they could add even more speed to this mm-hmm. team. And you're an offensive guy, and I'm kind of an old school guy, and I used to think, defense. Tom Brady and that offense won that Super Bowl this year. You know
of
what
course,
I mean?
Yeah.
And Atlanta's defense was playing well going into that game,
mm-hmm.
and it played well, you know, for part of the better part of the second half of the season. The offense won that football game. Tom Brady and here's something. Jameis is not Tom Brady. Jameis will never be Tom Brady.
Never.
He's laser accurate and he's just a one in a generation type player. But one thing that Jameis does mm-hmm. that Tom Brady does is he elevates the play around him.
Agreed.
Because every year I watch the Patriots and I don't know who half their receivers are
or
their running backs, but he
I don't
makes
know
them all
if anybody
better.
Elevates play more than Tom Brady.
No, nobody does more.
Like
you're right.
You take those receivers
sure.
and put them on the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
We're not going to know.
No. You're right. You're right. But you know what? Tom Brady could take an Adam Humphries and make him a 1,000-yard receiver.
No doubt.
You know what I mean?
No doubt.
He could make a Cecil Shorts and he'd be a 600-yard receiver.
But you know what that is, though? That's knowledge.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always say when in December and January, you got to run the football. I'm an old school guy.
Right.
Any rule I have doesn't pertain to the Patriots.
That's true.
It doesn't.
That's
if
true.
If the Patriots look you on film and they say, we have five guys we can line up and you guys can't cover us, they'll do it every play.
Right.
Because they know that their quarterback's going to get the ball out of his
sure.
hand in 2 seconds.
Sure.
Okay? The Bucs can't do that.
Right, right.
Because, you know, Jameis is still learning.
Right.
Like, when you line up with five wide receivers, okay, you really can't disguise a lot of coverage. There's no way
no.
to do it. You know, if it's zone or man, you're going
right.
to know that. So before the ball is snapped, Tom Brady knows where he's going.
Absolutely.
And that ball's coming out real quick, and
yep.
it makes his linemen look fabulous. It makes
yep.
his receivers look fabulous. It makes everybody. They don't throw the ball down the field
right.
that much.
Right.
They don't.
They don't. I mean, they'll dink and dunk, and then they'll take that shot down mm-hmm. the field occasionally.
I think they almost had 100
right.
plays in the Super Bowl. Was
yeah.
it close to that?
Yeah, it was over 90. Because the
Falcons of.
Was gassed. Their defense was gassed.
But on purpose. But,
yeah.
but that's because
oh, sure.
Bill Belichick and Tom Brady figured out what they were doing.
Yeah.
Okay, and I have a buddy that had money on the Falcons and texted me, this money's in the bank.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got two guys of Belichick and Brady on the other side now. It ain't to the bank.
And I've seen it 20 or 30 times in my life with those two, and I gave up on them. I said the same thing. I said, I didn't stop watching.
Sure.
I didn't flip the channel, but I thought, boy, you know, this one's over. And boy, I learned another lesson. You never count those two
never.
Out. Not a better quarterback head coach duo in the history of the league, and I don't know that we'll ever see a pair like that.
First of all, nobody's going to be that durable.
Right.
Okay, it's not going to happen again. This is what's going to happen going forward. The Hall of Fame's going to have to change its criteria, the whole thing. Because after Adrian Peterson, we might not ever have another running back go in. What running back do you see?
You're right. You look at running backs in the league right now playing, you're right. I mean,
who?
Yeah.
Nobody lasts anymore.
No.
Like,
no.
You might see a Le'Veon Bell or something like that, but 3 years from now, he's going to be gone.
Right.
He's going to be gone, okay? Like, Adrian Peterson was fantastic for, was it 10, 12
yeah.
years?
Yeah. Where's those 12,000, 13,000-yard career rushers
right.
anymore?
Marshawn Lynch will have to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think LaDainian Tomlinson just went in.
Yeah, he just went in.
AP will go in. He deserves to go in. That's it. I'm telling you, after that, there may not be another running back. It might not.
And the value, you know, of running backs has went down to a degree. Number one, look, when you played, Reggie Cobb ran the ball 35 times a game sometimes.
Correct.
You know
Correct.
What I mean? And you just don't see that anymore.
Nope.
You know what I mean? You just don't see that anymore. I mean,
you can't.
You're right.
It. Reggie was as big as a linebacker.
Sure.
Okay. You can't do that anymore because the players are different. And like I said, the linebackers are 265 coming downhill.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see, you know, the Walter Payton's back in the day, and like we went through, like when you see a Walter Payton who's dead, and you see Tony Dorsett who's having problems with his brain, and when you see Earl Campbell who hasn't been able to walk
right.
in 20 years,
right.
I used to hate Franco Harris because he stepped out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
I get it now.
Yeah.
I mean, Franco Harris is fine
sure.
now.
Sure.
Now, Walter Payton's not stepping out of bounds.
Yeah, that's true.
He's coming back in and giving a straight arm and bucking somebody, but he's gone.
Yep.
Okay, so these running backs now, and you're starting to see some NFL football players just retire. You're going to see some more of that coming up.
Yeah.
You're going to see guys going, listen, I got $10 million in the bank.
I'll tell you what you're seeing now, and this is, again, my son just started high school. I mean, he's in 10th grade now, going into 11th grade, but I coached him through youth football. And I grew up, I played football my whole life through high school. My dad played. I coached high school football at Plant City. But when I had a son, it was a decision. Do I let him do this? Yeah. Because I saw.
Yeah.
My neck still hurts from Daryl Smith laying me out on a one-on-one drill in front of Floyd Kelly in 1987 on a May in our spring practice in May at Plant City High School. My neck still hurts from that. You know what I mean? And that was 30 years ago.
I'm not sure I could pinpoint why my neck hurts.
Yeah.
But it hurts.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, I've taken a few and dished out a few licks from way back in the day.
Yeah.
And I taught my son, I coached my son at TBYFL as well for 5 or 6 years. Right. And it's my mentality has changed. Okay. It used to be, I used to get defensive when somebody said, well, your kid shouldn't play football when they're young. If I did it all again, I wouldn't have my son play until he was 12, the youngest.
Right, right.
Like, if your son is good enough to play in college and later on, he's going to learn the game.
Mike Evans played 1 year of high school football. Two years of college.
None.
Yes, exactly.
DeMar played like 1 year of college. Did he even play in college?
I don't. Maybe. He was a basketball player at Southern Miss. Here's a great story. Kellen Winslow Jr. is last year with the Buccaneers. Real jerk. Made Keyshawn Winston.
I've heard
but
that.
But real pain in the ass. But it was during the strike year, 2011. He had his first son, was born in the offseason. I was in open locker room after season started. I just said, hey, you know, congratulations on the birth of your son. And that was like the only time he ever acknowledged. He's like, hey, I appreciate that. And I said, is he gonna play ball one day? He says, blank, no. He says, my son's going to learn how to throw a curveball.
Yeah.
He's going to learn how to shoot free throws.
Swing a golf club.
He's going to swing a golf club and a tennis racket.
Yeah.
He says, there ain't no way. And I said, what about your dad, who we remember that game against the Dolphins where they're carrying him off the field, the abuse that he took. He said, he tried like hell to not get me to play. Now, he said, if my son keeps on and on, if he gets to high school and he wants to play, he can. Because if you're a good enough athlete, football is one of the things you can do starting 10th grade.
Sure.
You can't become a great golfer starting when you're 15,
absolutely
16,
not.
Tennis, baseball, those kind of things.
That's true. You know? I was talking to this about somebody the other day. Just yesterday in the gym, we're talking about athletic ability. And, you know, football, having coached, you know, youth football, football is different than soccer, and it's different than baseball, and it's different than basketball. This is why. You can't hide anywhere. There's nowhere to hide.
Right.
You can't, like in basketball, you just stand to the side and just go, just run. Football, somebody's still going to tag you.
Absolutely.
Okay? So there's nowhere you can hide these guys. You know what I mean? But athletic ability-wise, if you can play football, play basketball, you can play any sport.
Yeah.
You can play any sport other than the learned sports, which to me are golf. Hockey's a learned sport.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. If you're not just going to jump on some skates.
What? Telling me I'm not going to go to the Amelie and jump on skates?
You'll never see
me on skates.
But you can get some kid out of Africa, who's 6'9 or 6'11, say, here's a basketball, throw it in that hole.
Yeah.
Throw it in the hole.
Yeah.
But not skating and definitely not a golf club.
Right, either. Not a golf club. I agree with that.
So, you know, talking about evaluating talent, I was saying earlier that I love to watch the combine. I participated in the combine in 89. It was a traumatic time. But I love the competition of it and measuring yourself up against everybody else. And I was watching the combine this weekend, and what was amazing was, especially watching the offensive linemen, those kids aren't faster than we were.
No.
The kids were slow. The kids were all running 5.3s and 5.1s, and I'm like, what? What I would think that these guys would be faster.
Well, I mean, you mentioned it earlier. There's no bellies. I mean, you saw those guys in the tight shirts. They should be faster.
Like Warren Sapp about a belly.
Yeah.
Jerry Ball had a belly, but those some guns can get up a little bit. You know, they can run. Now I'm seeing a lot of these guys, and they just look stiffer to me. They don't look as athletic to me as they used to, maybe.
Can you work out too much? I mean, you're a guy that goes to the gym. Can you hurt yourself because, again, my son is right now is just a kicker, all right?
Mm-hmm.
He works out every day after school, and he's getting huge. Mm-hmm. His shoulders, and I'm like, I don't know that that's conducive to being a great kicker. You know what I mean? Well, I worry about him getting too tight, too big.
You see NFL punters?
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting pretty freaking big now. They really are.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think he can work out too much. Yeah. I really don't. I worked out as much as anybody possibly could, okay? And it's and to be a great athlete, I don't know what your son looks like, okay? But I know what I've looked like my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before. Hard work is great. Genetics is better.
Yeah.
Genetics is better, okay? I didn't necessarily work out harder than my roommates in college, but they couldn't bench press as much as me.
Right, right.
I didn't run as much as them, but they weren't faster than me.
Hey, Ian, the great thing about my son is we adopted him, so he didn't inherit my crappy athletic genetics. Now, I don't know where he gets, because he was a hell of an athlete in baseball. He was a quarterback and a linebacker in youth football. You know, he found a niche in kicking that he really likes, and I'm all for that.
No
you know
doubt.
What I mean? They don't get their bell rung nearly as much, so I'm okay with that. But, I see what you're saying, because there were guys, I was always a pretty big guy, and I got... You know, like if I got to pick up a car off of a burning lady underneath it, I can pick it up.
Sure.
But if you would tell me to go bench press 200 pounds, it ain't happening. You know what I mean? That's that kind of strength I have.
Sure.
But there were guys who were smaller than me that just, and my son talks about it all the time, guys that just rip and cut. You know, this happened. My son is more of the thicker type, you know, body type. And genetics does play a big part in it, sure.
It's a lot. And listen, I understand, like, I've played against a lot of, in a lot of different levels, okay? And, you know, so I see some of these kids now, and I'm saying, what do you bench press? And I bench press 275. Great. But I bench press 400 in high school.
Wow.
So if I'm going against you and you bench press 275, 400 gets real hectic after a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And not after a while, but early.
Early.
It's just like, you know, if you're a defensive back, okay, and you run a 4.9 and that receiver runs a 4.4.
Yeah, it's over.
You're in trouble.
You're in trouble. Big
so
time.
That's, I mean, football's it's genetics. It's it's physics. It's physics, okay? Because I've played against guys that were stronger than me, okay? Strength doesn't always equate on the football field. It doesn't, because if I'm playing offensive line and you bench press 500, I bench press 450, okay? Great. If my feet are quicker than yours,
absolutely.
If my pad level is lower than yours,
right.
if I'm taking better angles, nastier than you,
nastier heart, all of those factors,
all
absolutely.
The facts. Yep. Listen, I played against a kid in junior college. My coach goes, he's 400 pounds, and I'm watching him on film, and he's a monster on film, and he's just mauling dudes. But those guys sucked. I hit this dude in the stomach 3 times in the game, and he was making girl noises, okay?
Right.
And by second quarter, he was begging to come off the field, okay?
Right.
So that's the thing. And football was what's so beautiful about football is it's really probably no different than any other sport, but you could squawk all you want, and then we got to put our hand on the ground.
That's right.
And then there's really nowhere to hide, you know what I mean?
And I used to always tell my son and even the kids that I coached, we would always, right before the game, we would have them get down one-on-one and just knock the piss out of each other. Just a quick pop.
Sure.
Because the tone of a football game, a lot of times, is set on that first play. Because you get in somebody's head, particularly at the youth level in particular. And I would tell my son, there's going to be kids bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you knock the piss out of them early, you're in their head all game. And that's such a big factor in it.
Well, that sounds great. I've always said that coaching a lot of times is overrated, because when I had my South Tampa kids that were, you know, doctors and lawyers' sons, and the Neutral Park kids came around the corner, who we'll say didn't have a light-skinned kid on their team.
Right.
Okay? They were darker than most of the things in South Tampa. And when they came around the corner chanting penitentiary chants, psychologically, we had already lost the game.
Yes.
And I looked at my team, and they were just staring at them in awe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my favorite football stories of all time. Just as I'm about to give a pep talk to my team, like, don't be scared, one of my kids jumps up, runs to the fence, and kisses his mom on the lips. I love you, Mom. And listen to my pregame speech. This is what my pregame speech was. I looked at my coaches. I go, wait till you hear this pregame speech. This is my pregame speech. I've been watching all you guys, and you guys are all terrified. If you don't defend yourself, these guys are going to kill you.
Right. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt.
And I said, hey, guys, they're not playing,
right?
And you guys are playing.
Right.
I go, if you don't strap it on between the first play of the game, they kick the ball off, our best player picks the ball up and gets decapitated.
Right.
And I had to go out in the field, and I looked at him, I go, I told you.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, from that point of the game, it went straight downhill because our alpha dog was out, And all of a sudden, the players are on the bench. Coach, my ankle hurts.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, I know.
The mystery injuries. Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, your 12-year-old ankle hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
Either you sprained it or you didn't.
You know how many stomach aches our Pinecrest boys would have when we were playing a team from down in the 305?
Oh, yeah.
In spring.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden, they all had the flu.
Yeah, you know.
About midway through the first quarter, I got to go poop.
I said, I know you're hurt. Your feelings are hurt.
Right.
I get it, because you're getting killed out there. But that's what's also tough about football for me, because football's only played a certain way, okay? And it's a tough guy sport.
Yeah.
And there's no other way to describe it. And when you're coaching and a kid says, hey, coach, I have a headache, it's sensitive now.
Because, big time.
Because I can't – you know what I've always said? Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, if you play football, you're going to have a headache.
Yep.
It doesn't necessarily mean you have a concussion.
Right.
So – and I listen to the NFL, and the NFL's putting millions of dollars and keep your head up tackling. And I've always asked people, has anybody ever seen a great tackle with somebody with a head up? Have you really?
Yeah.
Never.
No.
Never.
No.
Anybody, you cannot tackle somebody with your head up. It's impossible.
Well, it worries me with some of these coaching techniques that we were learned as coaches, where they talk about, you know, bite through the ball, where you're supposed to go the ball on the outside, so your head goes on the outside.
Yes.
To me, and I saw many kids trying to attempt that, the guy runs through
their head,
head and their head goes that way.
But you know what that is? Genetics.
Yeah.
It's force.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I'm 290 and I'm running a 4.9 and I'm going to that spot, you ain't twisting my neck out of there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yep.
Okay. But if you're 180 and I'm 290, I'm running at you, your neck's coming out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's exactly.
Like, that neck is not big. That's why I was 290 and 300 pounds in high school, okay? There's only a couple ways you can tackle me. And all of them hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You're not tackling me waist up at all. It's not happening. Like, I was bench pressing 400 pounds in high school. You're just not gonna.
Yeah, you're gonna carry him all the way to the goal line.
I need with your helmet.
Right.
Or I'm not going down.
Right.
So If it sounds barbaric to you, then don't put your kid in football.
But that leads us to a whole other thing, Ian, where you see a guy like Cecil Shorts against San Diego last year. Again, the safety comes in, clips him at the knees, destroys his knees.
Yeah, I know.
And again, that's what the NFL would prefer instead of the helmet, because he didn't get a penalty on that. Booger McFarland, when I worked with 98.7, I remember Booger one day we were doing a show. I was filling in for Rich. He says, hit me in my head all day long.
All day.
But don't take my knees out, because my knees make me money.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the NFL cringes when people say stuff like that. But as an athlete, you know that to be the case.
Yeah, but let me tell you about the NFL, okay? CYA has been going on for a long time. They've been covering their ass a long time. Yeah. They keep on talking about, we're stringent on this. I see concussions getting put back on the football field every game, okay? They keep on saying, we have this guy in the sideline.
Yeah, independent guy.
Come on.
Right.
Okay, listen. The independent guy can't see everything going on. And sometimes we're seeing more on TV.
Absolutely.
And I used to go, that guy's concussed right there. You see that guy right there is concussed. And he'll leave and they'll see him come back.
Yeah.
And you know, they had the whole stories about the New York Jets. Elliot something was a coach with the doctor, and I guess he was their brain specialist, but he wasn't a brain doctor. He was a brain specialist of the whole NFL, but he wasn't a brain doctor. And they said, when you got a concussion, he asked the same three questions every single time, and everybody knew the answers, and they would actually be yelling them out as he's asking the questions. So
wow.
And you've seen it throughout the years where, not so much lately, but you would see somebody say, one time I think it was the wide receiver from the Patriots, from the Steelers, missed a game for a concussion. I can't think of who it was right now. And people were questioning him. And I'm like, well, that is very counterproductive as a player if you're questioning somebody for missing a game for a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a football player, I'm telling you, I'm playing if I can play.
Yeah.
If I don't play because of a concussion, something really bad has to be going on.
It's serious. DeMar Dotson missed a couple games last year with a concussion, and I saw him after he missed the first game, and he says, I want to get back out there. He says, but man, this stuff is no joke.
That's not a joke.
It is not a joke.
Like,
he says, I've gotten hit, and I probably have, but he says, but this one, he says, it's no joke.
And
I'm glad that, you know, he was smart enough. But there are guys, you know, DeMar's a pretty established guy, right? He's not going to lose his job missing a couple games, so on and so forth. But there are guys, and we've seen it, you know, that are going to, no matter what, put themselves back in a bad position like that. And it's a terrible line, because the NFL used to market. I remember as a kid going to Blockbuster Video My favorite video VHS to get was NFL's Greatest Hits.
Crunch they courses.
Marketed,
yes, absolutely.
They marketed this
they
stuff.
They still do. They still do.
Yeah, well.
ESPN plays a
yeah,
little
well, that's
over.
True. That's true. Absolutely.
And once again, look back and look and see how many great hits happen without helmets. You have to lead with
yeah,
your helmet.
Yeah.
And the NFL has to – they have to start cracking down on those hits, not because they have to stop them, just because of litigation.
Absolutely. The liability you know? Involved in it. Absolutely.
And if you,
a guy like you played with John Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
That guy couldn't play in today's
no
NFL.
Not a
Scott
chance.
Brantley, that hit on Eric Hipple.
Please.
He would have been kicked out of the league for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's just football.
It is, and it's to the point now where I think it's worse for the athletes because I think they find themselves in gray areas sometimes.
Deshaun Goldson was a perfect example. Comes to Tampa Bay from San Francisco about the time that the crackdown really started. This guy was lost.
Yeah, he was.
He was lost. He didn't know what to do. Go high, go low. He was lost.
Sure.
You know, he ended up going to Washington, playing a few years, playing pretty decent. But he hated it. Because he hired somebody to try and teach him how to tackle the way the NFL wanted him to.
Well,
that's
his whole
how,
life,
you know,
he tackled a certain way. And this is what drives me nuts. When I see a player peel back and just de-cleat a player, and I see a flag on the ground, I'm like, please no, please
right.
no. And then it's a flag for defense hitting a defenseless right. player. And this is what's going through my mind. My whole career, I went hunting for defenseless players.
Standing around.
I went
not,
hunting.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, you ever hear the saying, get your head on a swivel?
Right.
That's because people
sure.
are looking for defenseless players.
Right.
On an interception one time, I had my head on a swivel, turned it back, and John Randall hit me one time. And I felt like my head spun around like, you know, the Exorcist.
The Exorcist, right.
And then I felt my feet spinning around. And then I saw that I was ass over elbow, and I was seeing the crowd going different ways. And I hit the ground, and I remember looking at the ground and looking at the grass. And I jump up, and I just started going crazy. Like, Tony Mabry was like, yo, bro, relax.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that was a concussion.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But afterwards, I gave John love.
Yeah.
I said, good hit, bro.
Yeah.
I go, but you know, I'm going to take the same one.
I'm going to look for it
if I
see you. I'm
going to take
the same
one.
Sure.
Just like Warren Sapp on the backside. Oh, it's a dirty hit. Okay.
You're on the field.
You're on the field.
You're on the field. You're one of the 11 guys. Hey, going back to my son, I hate to keep bringing him up, but his first or second year of youth football, he was on kickoff team. Ball went to the other side, kickoff return. He's just standing there.
Yeah.
That Brandon Bronco player didn't care. He came down there and lit him up.
Lit him up.
He ended up in the emergency room, his shoulder in a sling.
Hey.
You better be ready. If you're standing between those white lines,
absolutely.
You're going to get hit.
I love that. Now, another thing I want to touch on is a lot of things going on last year. It seemed like the Colin Kaepernick thing was like one of the bigger stories of the NFL last year. Unfortunately, whichever one. Now, Colin Kaepernick, who you know is a free agent now, is saying that now he's going to stand for the national anthem. I've kind of swayed back and forth with Colin Kaepernick. Now
right.
he lost me, okay?
Right.
Because I was okay with him standing
yeah,
up for something.
Yeah, making a stance, sure.
But now when it comes to, now we're talking about dollars and cents.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, that's all this is dollars and cents. Now he says he's going to stand for the national anthem. That's just telling his next employer that I'm not going to be a problem, pick me, and then
right.
you don't know what's going to happen
right.
afterwards.
Well, I think his dumbest mistake was walking away from that guaranteed money from the 49ers. I don't know that he's going to find that anywhere near that on the open market.
Why would anybody pay him money?
You know, I don't get that. Now, again, I was, and this was an unpopular opinion that I had, you know, I kind of support, I would have done things differently, but what I respected about Colin Kaepernick's stance last year is he put his money where his mouth was. He donated. He
okay.
tried to make
mm-hmm.
changes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got ultimate respect for that.
Sure.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? I really do. And what gives him the right to not stand is what makes this country unique.
I agree.
You do that in
I
Russia,
agree.
They'll put a bullet in your head.
Correct.
North Korea,
Correct.
You're dead.
Mm-hmm.
They'll feed you to lions. I mean, that's just the way it is. While we don't necessarily agree with it, that's what makes this country great, is no yeah. one can tell you have to in that situation. Mm-hmm. We have that freedom of choice. Now, I still think, personally, it was a bad choice from a public relations standpoint.
Sure.
But if he genuinely felt that with his heart, we had a mm-hmm. conference call with the 49ers this year, mm-hmm. and we got Colin Kaepernick. And I asked him a couple of those, you know, questions about that specifically. You know, I mean, what have you seen? Have you seen any changes and things like that? And he stood his ground. He didn't back down from anything. And so I can respect that. There's certain things. I'm not a big fan of him standing up at a podium with a Castro T-shirt on. I mean, I thought socks with,
that
you
might
know,
be a little much.
You know, that's a little much. You know what I mean? Depicting cops as pigs. I mean, that's a little crazy. But you're right. That was my first thought when I saw that all of a sudden now he's going to stand again, because he said, well, I've seen some positive change. I'll be honest with you. What's the positive change? We haven't seen a video cam of an African American being shot by a cop in the last couple months. Is that what he's
Has
talking
been
about?
That
change?
Has
you know,
been that
I don't
long?
Know. Yeah, I mean, but I mean, it hasn't blown up to a big national story. So, has there really been any change?
Well, Colin Kaepernick didn't change that.
Right.
Okay?
No, there's no doubt.
And the shame of it is a lot of things that he was telling us that was happening worsened by him kneeling. Okay, and that's sad. Okay?
It created some tensions and some division racially, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But you know what it did do? After we got off that conference call, I was there with Pat Donovan and another guy from 620, one of their new guys. I apologize. I can't remember his name. Tom Jones was there. It was late in the day, and a lot of the media guys left. Mm-hmm. And there was a 40-minute debate going on, and one of them, I won't say who, was very anti-Kaepernick. And you know what I said? I said, you know what, though? We've spent 40 minutes mm-hmm. talking about something
exactly.
we would have never talked about.
Absolutely.
Never.
Absolutely.
And so in that sense, it did. Oh, I think they did help in a sense because it whether you agree or disagree, it certainly he was given an opportunity to explain his side of things, and maybe people understood things a little bit better.
Well, I played the game, okay? So I dealt with the media, and I never really had a problem with the media. Mm-hmm. There was one guy or two I didn't agree with, and they knew they knew it, okay? And then I was in the media for a while, you know? And I think I'm as much of a realist as anybody else. And like, there's people out there that don't think that there's a difference between the way a white person and a black person is tried in court. They're wrong.
Right.
And if you talk about the way a white athlete and a black athlete is perceived, you think that's the same, you're wrong.
Right.
You're wrong. Okay, I've said some things before on air and people got real sensitive.
Yeah.
I said this one time, and I said, I'm the biggest Mike Allstott fan in the world. And I go, but if Mike Allstott was black, do you think he'd be as popular? And people got mad. I'm going to ask you that question.
I can assure you, you're absolutely right.
I know.
And you know what? And you know what? And I don't even, and I don't think that's necessarily wrong because, you know, I mean, guys like my dad, right? Mm-hmm. He grew up in the 60s and things like that, you know what I mean? And played on an all-white high school football team and rarely even played against African Americans. I mean, my dad went to the Army in Germany, and there were people that were in Germany that had never even seen an African American person their entire life,
absolutely.
You know, until some of these Army guys came over. You know what I mean? For whatever reason, Mike also was that lunch pail kind of guy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And whether it's white or black, it's that blue collar mentality
that
people.
All white running backs.
Well, you know what? And I don't remember which receiver. And I don't know if it was Michael Irvin. Somebody here in the last couple of days said it. If Christian McCaffrey was black and put up those numbers he did at Stanford in the combine, he'd be a top 10 pick. So now the bias is going. You know, it could be that way. And I'll be honest with you, I am a white guy. Right?
Okay.
I'm as white as they come.
You're pretty
red
white.
Hair,
you're pretty,
I'm pretty white. I'm pretty tan for a redhead. But I'm white.
Okay.
I've got that stigma too. Do I want a white running back on my football team?
Let me.
Is that wrong? Am I wrong?
Let me answer it for you. Okay. If I'm a GM, I 100% want a white running back on my team. I want a white running back that's going to last.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that hasn't been around. Like, when I look at a running back, like at this kid Fournette, okay, mm-hmm. he ain't going to last.
Runs upright, too big. Yep, I agree.
If you can't evade hits, he won't last.
Right.
McCaffrey's not going to last. He's not going to last. Now, if he does last, you couldn't find a more marketable person in the world.
Yeah.
He'll sell so many damn jerseys.
You got that
if
right.
he rushes for 1,000 yards for anybody's team, he'll sell so many damn jerseys.
Right.
But we're leery of it because there's really – is there any white running backs right now?
Danny Woodhead. Going to sign with the Ravens, I think.
But he's
a
utility guy.
Yeah, he's kind of a utility guy.
Yeah,
but as far as a three down back,
Woodhead hit the ball 25 times.
No way.
Okay.
He gets hurt every year, getting it 12 times
a
game.
It's like if somebody said, I got this DB, this corner, and he's white, I'd be like, I'm good.
Who was the last one? Jason Sehorn?
And you know what's funny? Let me tell you a great Jason Sehorn story, okay? And this is a great example of what I'm saying. Jason Sehorn went to the Pro Bowl the year before. And when I was with the Philadelphia Eagles, John Gruden was our offensive coordinator. So we walk into the meeting room, and he says, Strahan's amazing, blah, 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 goes down the line. And he goes, and this is how this goes. And he circled Jason Sehorn. This is a year after he went to the Pro Bowl.
Right.
He circles him, and he goes, this guy can't cover anybody on our team. And I watched film, and he couldn't.
Right.
He couldn't. He might have made the Pro Bowl that year, too.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so the Pro Bowl's a popularity contest.
Right, right.
Let me give you a story on the other end of the spectrum. We played the Atlanta Falcons. And this is when Deion was in his prime, okay? and you're a Florida State guy. You know I'm not blowing smoke. So Deion was a bad SOB, all right? John Gruden walked in the meeting room, and they had the whole big screen up, and he put a box from the end all the way up, and he put a box over the whole left side. He goes, we're not going to throw the ball here. Period.
Right.
Like, you could put four receivers there. He still doesn't want to throw the ball there because our quarterback's arm wasn't strong enough to throw the ball over there.
Right.
Okay? So people, you know, when I look at people and they want to judge somebody, whether they made the Pro Bowl or whatever, that's not how I judge somebody. No. I judge somebody by watching the film and saying, let's see what he does. Let's see him make plays. So if you're great, and I trust me, I played against great, okay?
Sure.
I really did.
Yep.
And if you ran the ball near great, they made the tackle. So if you're great, make a lot of tackles. Defensive lineman, if you're great, you have to make a lot of plays.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean pushing guys back. I mean disrupting plays to win games. We don't have enough guys doing that.
Right.
You know who I really, really want? Calais Campbell, badly.
Jaguars. Going to the Jets. $14 million
a
year.
Give me that guy all day long.
Disruptive every play.
And just mean as a snake.
Yep.
You know
Nasty.
What? I love mean as a snake. Yep. Nothing's better to me than mean as a snake.
Right.
And you know,
for 60 minutes on Sunday.
Yeah. And that's fine.
Yep.
I think Quan Alexander has some of that in him.
He's got some.
Okay. No, he definitely does. And if you put some more of that around him, the mentality, we've been nice for too long.
And I think Jason Light, you know, he understands that because he sees that. Because Bill Belichick is not afraid to bring in a guy that's considered a little crazy or a little nasty and maybe only use him for 1 or 2 years to get what he needs out of him. And Jason has the utmost respect for Belichick and that organization. Also Arizona, where he came from right before Tampa Bay. You know, and Arizona's been known to have a little nasty. You got Campbell, you know what I mean? They had Darnell Dockett, you know what I mean, who was as nasty as they
come. He was nasty.
You need crazy, you know. And you look at the top pass rushers, the top sack guys in the NFL, and you played against some of them. There's two of them that I can think of that weren't nuts. But at times they were nuts. Leroy Selman, nicest guy in the world, right?
He wasn't nuts.
Wasn't nuts.
Yeah.
Reggie White.
Preacher.
Great guy. But on the football field, could he get a little crazy?
Yeah, but that word nuts is a funny thing.
The point is a lot of these guys have come from tough environments.
Yes.
They saw domestic violence. Mm. You know what I mean? They've had issues. And it makes them, for whatever reason, that nastiness gives them that edge as a football player. Now, you don't want a crazy guy like that's going to hurt your team and your community and divide your locker room. So Jason Light's smart enough to know that, too. But he needed this football team to get tougher. And Jameis is not a nasty guy, but we saw him headbutt a player and get a penalty.
I think he's got nasty for his position.
Absolutely.
When I see a quarterback pitch a ball and then go lead, I saw him hand off the ball and go lead. Yeah. I've watched so much film.
Right.
I've never seen that in my life. And I'm going to say this. When you said Jason Light, he has a particular locker room, okay? Bill Belichick has a particular locker room as well, as did Bill Parcells. Nobody was separating those guys.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. How outlandish would you have to be to go into New England's locker room and separate everybody?
Right.
This is not going to happen.
Right.
People have tried. I don't think they try. Once you go in that locker room, this is the way we do it.
And you know what, though? And you don't always – and I think Mark Dominic got into that thing where they started drafting all these captains and these good guys and worried about the locker room chemistry maybe too much because Scott Reynolds tells me stories of that Super Bowl defense and their heyday of Warren Sapp and Chidi Ahanotu rolling around on the floor slugging each other. Hardy Nickerson beating guys up.
I saw that before.
You know what I mean? You don't have to be best friends all the time.
No,
now when 60 Minutes on Sunday comes together, you're playing for your brother, you're playing for your guy. And there's no doubt Warren and Chidi played their heart outs for each other during those 60 minutes. Hated each other.
You don't have to like each other.
You don't have to like each other. That's what I keep trying to say.
You're
not going to put 53 grown men in any setting and all 53 get along. And trust me, as good as this locker room is, and it's the best I've seen since I've been back with Pewter Report since 2011, there's still cliques. There's still guys that do their thing in that corner.
Every single locker room has cliques. All they have to understand is that we're all going for the same goal.
Right.
And you have to have mature kids out there. The ones you were talking about, you know, a lot of those guys were immature when I was there.
Right.
and they might have matured a little bit as I left. Mm-hmm. But they knew how to prepare themselves, okay? Like you talked about early Trent Dilfer compared to a late Trent Dilfer. Those are two different athletes.
Two different athletes, sure.
Early Vinny Testaverde that I was with early, he had no idea what he was doing.
What year did you come to Tampa?
90 was my first
90,
year.
Okay.
Vinny was
Richard
our quarterback.
Williamson. No, that was
Ray Perkins.
Ray Perkins then. So you did the 3 days at University
yes,
of
sir.
Tampa.
The last ones, yes.
Jesus.
Yes.
I've got a old Buccaneer Bruce like windshield shield that I took out there, and I may have your autograph on it. It's got Dan Turk, a couple other guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some no-name guys, you know, I got autographs from. The Keith McCants. I don't know if Keith McCants was there at the time, right around
year.
There.
Keith was my year, and that was a different story there. Yeah.
There's a guy that didn't put it in either.
Well, no, he didn't. I mean, I would look Keith right in his face and say he didn't put it in.
I think he'd probably say it now, too.
Of course, no, he has no choice.
Right.
Because, listen, I did it for a while, and I would sit down with people and say, let's compare what we did, okay? I mean, you can't last a long time if you don't take it serious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in anything. That's as a writer.
Oh, sure.
As a reporter. If it's not important to you.
Right.
And if it's important to you, you can't be out Friday night. You can't be out Thursday nights. You can, but eventually it's going to run out, okay? And you got to put in the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're younger as a college football player, it's not about putting in the time.
Right.
It's just about getting on the field and being better than everybody else.
Yeah.
But when you get to an NFL field, there's no weak links out there.
The worst guy in the NFL is the best guy in college, essentially. And I've heard players say that. You know, I mean, it was a shock when they got here. You know, they're All-American type guys, first, second-round draft picks. And there are guys that, you know, are undrafted free agents that are kicking their ass. But would have been the best player on their college team. You know what I mean? And you know what, Ian? There is a fine line between the New England Patriots and the Cleveland Browns as far as the talent level goes. You know what I mean? These are still 53 of the top athletes in the world on the Cleveland Browns. Now, for whatever reason, they're not as good. And but there's so many factors that go into it, coaching and things like that. When you get to this level, you are superior.
Resumes
too. That's true.
When you're talking about just athletic ability, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't mean that their right tackle is any better than the other.
Right.
But look at the resume.
Yeah.
Look at the resume.
Yep.
Look at the win-loss. Look at, you could take a player and take him off the Patriots and put him on the Browns and you'll never hear from him again. You'll never hear of them again, okay? It's coaching. It's the right organization. It's the culture.
Right.
Culture is a very good word.
And that's been the biggest thing that I think that Jason Light has done to kind of turn things around is that culture a little bit. And it started with drafting Winston. And let me tell you something. Marcus Mariota may end up being a statistically better quarterback than Jameis Winston. When it's said and done, he could, because he's a talented guy.
I don't think he's
going
to last physically.
For durability, he's already shown that.
Yes.
But from a pure talent standpoint, I understand why they were 1A and 1B. Jason Light did absolutely the right thing with Jameis Winston because he needed that personality, that character, that leadership in this locker room for this team.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that I don't know the Buccaneers are 9-7 with Marcus Mariota last year. I don't know. I mean, maybe they are. But does the team start to believe that they can win football games?
You know what's ironic? And tell me if I was wrong. I don't know if I'm wrong, but this is what I've heard. I heard that Dirk Cutter wanted Marcus Mariota.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And Lovie Smith wanted Jameis Winston.
Jason Light really wanted and had to took Lovie to the Rose Bowl game, the one they lost against Oregon. Jameis played well in that game for the most part. Stupid fumble there on that desperation that everybody made fun of. But overall, I mean, he played well. Sold Jameis Winston, Lovie Smith at that point. But Dirk was the last one to get on board with Jameis Winston.
Well, how funky do you think it got in the locker room before, after, during the firing when Lovie Smith's like, okay, I wanted Jameis,
right.
You wanted Marcus,
right.
We brought Jameis in,
right. and now
you're shipping me out,
right.
And you're staying?
Right.
Or do you think that got funky?
That had to have been, number one, it was awkward for Jason, because Jason and Lovie were genuine friends. I've talked to Jason often. They really liked and respected each other. And I don't know, and in all honesty, Lovie was here before Jason. Right? Jason, I mean, in a sense, Lovie didn't hire Jason, but he gave a seal of approval to the Glazers.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
So the awkwardness of essentially a year later or 2 years later, you're firing the guy that brought you in. I mean, and then the guy, Lovie Smith, who brought Dirk Cutter in, and all of a sudden Dirk Cutter. So, you know, it was very I can assure you, Jason Light had a tough time with that situation. It bothered him. Though when he did that press conference after Lovey was fired, that emotion on his face was absolutely genuine, 100%.
That was like when I fired my agent of 9 years. It still bothers me.
Yeah,
like it's something I had to do, you know, for business wise.
Right.
You know, I'm hanging out here at Square One Burgers, and it's getting right around lunchtime. You hungry?
I'm starving. Well, look at me. I'm always hungry.
That's right. You look
good. I ain't missed many meals.
Well, we're going to my boy Chris is going to come with some food. We're going to eat, nice. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more, and we're going to indulge in some food. And I'm hanging out here with Mark Cook from the Peter Report, peterreport.com. You guys been around. You guys were Buccaneer Magazine. And I remember that from where I have
when
a couple
you were there.
Still.
Yeah.
Buccaneer Magazine, then Peter Report, then PeterReport.com.
Scott Reynolds, this is his 24th year. He graduated Kansas State in 1995.
Wow.
Came down here as an intern, got a job, and he's been doing it ever since. He's never had another job but Peter Report.
Good
so
for him. Still grinding, anyway. Still grinding away.
Still grinding away. And it's still, to me, the best in that building because what Scott does that I respect and I've tried to learn is he builds relationships with the players and with members in the organization. Mm-hmm. He doesn't expose them. He doesn't, throw them out to get a story. But when they respect you, they tend to talk to you a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Helps us formulate our opinions. We're not going to say, well, this person said this, and then burn our bridge because then we never have that bridge again. Scott's a master at being able to do that. And he rubs people the wrong way a little bit sometimes.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen every once in a while.
But if you lose
it,
I think he's fair.
Yeah. If you lose that respect level, you're definitely going
to
know.
You need to have him on one of these at some point down the road. He's got so many great stories about the time that Monty Kiffin kicked him out and wouldn't talk to him for 3 months.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. About something he wrote. Monty had the magazine. He's like, look at this. What is this crap you wrote? Oh, he's got a million stories. He can tell you some great John Gruden ones, too.
Well, I've got some good ones myself.
But see, I didn't tell you this until you had me on because you would have totally dumped me and brought him in instead.
So
now I'm telling you he would have been a much better guest than me.
You're paving the way. So let's get us some food. How about
right,
that?
Sounds good.
All right. Hanging out here at Square One on Henderson, my favorite place for burgers in the Bay Area. And I'm hanging out with the manager, Chris Rodman. How you doing today, brother?
Excellent. How about yourself?
Fantastic. Now that I have some of this wonderful food here. I'm here a lot. I'm not joking when I say I'm here a lot, am I?
A couple times a week.
A couple times a week, yeah. You put me on Front Street, I'm eating healthy though, right?
Oh yeah.
No, not always.
Yeah.
That's don't lie.
Sometimes.
Don't lie. Don't lie to the people.
You with the ahi tuna, the edamame.
Yes. Okay. Sometimes I go healthy. They have the ahi tuna right here. The buffalo. I don't really see buffalo on a lot of menus. The buffalo here to me tastes better than any beef that I've ever had.
Well, it's fresh. Mm-hmm. You got good quality meat. Hormone-free, antibiotic-free, raised holistically, mm-hmm. You're going to get the right flavor.
No doubt. And Square One has been around for how long now?
9 years we just celebrated.
9 years, man. And I know one popped up in Gainesville. You guys
Fort
are everywhere.
Myers, Brandon, wow. St. Pete, two in Sarasota.
Unbelievable. Good for you. This is the original one, right?
This is the original.
On Henderson. Now, you brought the Boomer Sooner, my favorite meatloaf. The ahi tuna I have very often. I try to stay away from the onion rings. They're delicious, by the way.
They're dangerous.
Yeah, I know. It's like, onion rings are a funny food to me. Like, I find when I eat an onion ring, I feel like I gain 10 pounds immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like I have to go to the gym right now. I had one onion ring.
Yeah,
you're
going to need a nap.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So what else you guys have going on here? I know you guys always have different events and you're pairing foods and stuff like that. Not your average burger place.
Not our average burger place. We just wrapped up our bourbon, bacon, and burger dinner.
Mm.
So we paired different bourbons with bacon-inspired dishes, a lot of our menu creations, some newer things, and you get bourbons from all walks of life. So we do a barrel-aged old-fashioned. We take Woodford Reserve, a different liqueur and a different bitters, different flavored bitters, and let that age in a barrel for a good 4 to 6 weeks.
And you guys did a wonderful job of using Touch Vodka for all these different drinks that you have. You guys are the only ones that are kind of experimenting with it right now, right?
A little bit. Yeah. We made some signature cocktails, some classics, some different things.
Yeah, man. And the Dignitarian, which I have a little hand in. But you create it. It's delicious. It really is.
It's one heck of a cocktail.
Yeah, it gets you in trouble too sometimes. No doubt about that.
It's a little too easy to drink.
There you go. Well, you guys actually just won an award, didn't you, for best burger in town?
Best burger in the Bay.
Period.
Yes, sir.
I love it. Going
totally
up against everybody.
Everybody.
Good for you guys, man. I mean, I knew you guys had the best burger, and that's what it's all about. So if you guys won a wonderful burger, Square One Burgers. This is in my hood over here in, on Henderson. The food's excellent, but you can actually take off burger because the wings are great here, the meatloaf is great here, the salads are great here, the milkshakes and the drinks, everything is wonderful here.
And the best part is you don't even have to come in. You can pull up, get curbside. We have two delivery platforms now through Uber Eats and Amazon.
What has Uber Eats done to you guys?
Uber Eats has been fantastic. Overnight, it's given us a 20% increase in sales. It's opening us up to a brand new audience. 9 years we're here, and we still have people coming in every day. I never had you before. Didn't even realize you were here, but I ordered from Uber Eats, and now I'm a fan.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate Square One Burgers. I think it's just actually Square One now. And I appreciate this food, and we're going to sit down, and we're going to get elbow deep and knee deep in some of this food. And this is Flavor in Your Ear. We pop up at a different wonderful restaurant every week in the Bay Area, and you never know where we're going to pop up next week. But we always have some great conversation. I want to thank Mark Cook from ThePewterReport.com. Go check them out. They always got a bunch of stuff happening. They're in the know. When I'm trying to get my information, I go to PewterReport.com. And, next week, you never know what we could be talking about. We could talk about Combine, the draft, the whole nine yards. So this is Flavor in Your Ear, Ian Beckles. Everybody have a wonderful week, and be safe. Peace out.
To keep the conversation going, follow Ian on Twitter at Ian Beckles and check out DignitaryRadio.com to get the latest on where you can find him next. This has been Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear on Radio Influence.
Put the flavor in your ear, the voice of the people's here. It's in that flavor. Flavor. Bringing that flavor. Flavor.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous sports babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl. Get Duffified live with Chef Brian Duffy, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.